Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, a close encounter with a newly discovered asteroid and innovative ideas from the 3.8 billion years of life on Earth. Here's a scientist soundbite.
That's a very conceivable distance, so to have an asteroid pass that close, it's kind of scary.
That's Skywatcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, Science News of the Week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Researchers have discovered that we humans are more like gorillas than we thought. Gorillas are the last of the living great apes to have their genome decoded. The first complete gorilla genome confirms that the chimpanzee is actually our closest relative. But about 15% of the human genome map more closely resembles the gorilla than the chimpanzee. This study was published in the journal Nature on March 7th.
A 6.9 magnitude earthquake shook northern Japan on March 14th, in much the same region heavily damaged by the March 11th, 2011 quake and tsunami a year ago. Several strong aftershocks were also felt in the region. As of this recording, no injuries or damages have been reported.
In 2012, the vernal or spring equinox comes on March 20th at 5:14 Universal Time. That's 12:14 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the U.S., placing the equinox late at night on March 19th for Western U.S. states. This March equinox signals the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere and autumn in the Southern Hemisphere. It marks that special moment when the sun crosses the celestial equator, going from south to north. Happy spring or autumn to all of you.
Indiana University released a study early this month indicating a possible connection between tornadoes and minor seismic activity. A week after a series of severe weather outbreaks in late February and early March 2012, scientists from Indiana University Bloomington conducted geophysical experiments in which they detected seismic activity in the same areas that were hit by tornadoes. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard.
That's Science News of the Week. Song of the Week is by the band Quiet Company, winner of 10 Austin Music Awards, this week at the South by Southwest Music Festival.
Nothing's as good when you're
Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky and a newly discovered asteroid that's on a close approach to Earth. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. Well, this is a great story, and it's kind of a scary story. So this asteroid is called 2012 DA14, and it was very recently discovered, hence the 2012 designation in its name. And this asteroid is going to have a close encounter with Earth in the year 2013 on February 15th.
How close are we talking about?
Well, it's going to come somewhere around 17,000 miles. That's about 27,000 kilometers. So 17,000 miles, Jorge. I mean, I don't know. I've taken road trips across the summer, you know, where I've driven pretty much not 17,000 miles. But, you know, that's a very conceivable distance. So to have an asteroid pass that close, it's kind of scary.
What do scientists know about this asteroid out there?
Well, it's a little guy. It's a small asteroid, as asteroids go. It's about 150 feet across, and that's why it was only recently discovered. And its orbit is somewhat similar to Earth's. It takes about the same amount of time to go around the sun as the Earth does, more or less. But its orbit is inclined to ours. It's tilted with respect to ours. And so there are a couple of times in its orbit where it makes these close approaches to Earth, usually close approaches to Earth's orbit. Usually when it makes those close approaches, Earth is far away in some other part of the orbit, so it misses us by, you know, millions of miles. But on February 15th of 2013, it's going to come within 17,000 miles.
And this asteroid, 2012 DA14, it's a bit of a surprise for scientists, isn't it? It's newly discovered.
Well, you know, scientists began looking for close passing asteroids several decades ago. Like when I first got into astronomy several decades ago, they were just beginning to talk about the possibility that an asteroid could strike the Earth, and they set up programs to look specifically for these asteroids. So, of course, now that we're looking for them, we're finding them, and that's why we're seeing these, you know, incidents occur where these asteroids come close to Earth. But this one is a really close one. 17,000 miles, that's, you know, the moon is a quarter million miles away. Geosynchronous satellites orbit at 22,000 miles. So this asteroid is going to come within the orbit of some of our satellites.
And what will it look like? Will people be able to see this asteroid?
Well, people will be able to see it if they're equipped to see it. So it will not be visible to the unaided eye. You'll need binoculars at least, or preferably a telescope to see it. And you'll need some kind of star chart to follow its track, its path across the sky, because it will move across the sky. Not quickly, like a meteor, like a shooting star shoots across the sky. It won't be that quick, but it will move across several days. People will begin to see it. Depending on how good your telescope is, you'll begin to see it, and then people will see it cross in front of the star background as it sweeps close to Earth.
I mean, this is an amazing challenge for amateur astronomers out there to be able to see this this little chunk of our solar system out there on a close approach to Earth.
Yeah, it's an amazing challenge for amateur astronomers, and it's just kind of a mind-boggling conceptual challenge for the rest of us to think that there is this rock in space that's going to pass so close. So if it's not going to strike us, and I have so much trust in astronomers' calculations of these things, because after all, decades ago, we knew enough about calculating orbits to send people to the moon and bring them back. And nowadays, we actually send our spacecraft out to objects like this and put them in orbit around things like asteroids. So we know a lot. Astronomers know a lot about calculating orbits, and I do trust that they know the orbit of this object well enough to know that it is not going to strike us. However, it's kind of scary to think about it getting that close. And one of the things that's scary about it is that we don't have much time between when it was discovered, just recently, and when it's going to have its closest approach on February 15th of 2013. You know, if indeed it were on a collision course with Earth, would we have enough time to mount a spacecraft expedition to this asteroid and, bump it off course or, otherwise move it out of the way?
Well, right. I mean, because we're talking about this asteroid that is on close approach to Earth in 2013.
Right.
But it keeps coming back. Just like the Earth goes around the Sun, this asteroid will go around the Sun as well, and we may cross paths in 2020.
Right. There is actually, at this point, a 1 in 83,000 chance that the asteroid will strike Earth in 2020. That's a very remote chance that that would happen. And astronomers, I did speak with Don Yeomans of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He told me that when the asteroid passes in 2013, they expect to refine the orbit even better and eliminate that possibility. So, yes, there are possibilities of this asteroid, this 2012 DA14, striking us at some point in the future.
And so far, you know, we really haven't had anything bad happen as far as asteroids go. But in the past, you know, there is evidence huge asteroids struck the planet, wiped out dinosaurs.
Oh, I mean, there are impact craters all over the Earth. If you go to Wikipedia, for example, and you search for the word impact crater, you'll just find this terrifying list of impact craters on the Earth from asteroids that did indeed strike us. And of course, the most recent event that happened is the Tunguska event in 1908, where something exploded in the atmosphere and flattened miles of forest in Siberia and killed a bunch of reindeer. So it's now thought that that was, you know, either an asteroid or more likely a small comet that, you know, came into the atmosphere and probably vaporized before it hit the ground, but still, you know, caused some damage. So, yeah, we live on a crowded planet nowadays, and there are these things flying around in space. But luckily, we have astronomers, yay, to the rescue, looking with their telescopes and trying to keep track of these things. So, hey, personally, that's one study that I would vote to keep.
And I personally can't wait for the pictures to come in from the amateur astronomers out there listening, possibly, of this asteroid 2012 DA14. When it comes close to Earth in 2013.
Yeah, me too, Jorge.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Sky, heard globally on over 1,200 stations, including Voice of America. Janine Benyus is well known as a popularizer of biomimicry, learning strategies from nature and applying them to human problems. She's a co-founder of the Biomimicry Guild, which consults with industry to design more sustainable products, and she's the president of the Biomimicry Institute, a nonprofit that promotes the transfer of ideas, designs, and strategies from biology to sustainable human systems design. Earth Sky spoke with Janine Benyus outside her home in Montana. Ms. Benyus, what is biomimicry and how did it come to be?
Biomimicry is innovation inspired by nature. It's the process of looking at something like a leaf and trying to figure out how to make a better solar cell. It's something that's been going on for a long time, actually, if you think about the Wright brothers and looking at turkey vultures to learn about dragon lift in flight. But now, it's actually becoming one of the ways that engineers and product designers and architects do their work. It's become popular in the design disciplines, mainly, I think, because people are looking for more sustainable ways to do things, to sip energy instead of guzzle it, and to shave materials, and to do things in less toxic ways. And organisms know how to do this. After 3.8 billion years, life has learned what works and what's appropriate on the planet. And right now, that's what the people trying to redesign our world are looking for, a way for us to live here in a way that enhances this place. Organisms know how to do that.
What are some of your favorite examples of biomimicry?
I like looking at what organisms do that's completely different from how we do the same thing. Life doesn't use detergent to clean itself. If you think of things like leaves that need to stay clean, you wonder how do they keep the dust off them? The famous example is the lotus leaf. That's a leaf that is in a muddy area, and yet it's very clean and pristine. It's been mimicked. The way it keeps itself clean is it has bumps on its surface. When rainwater comes, it balls up, dirt particles teeter on those bumps, and the rainwater balls them away, pearls them away. And that's been mimicked in building facade paint called Lotusin that when it dries, it's got that bumpy structure. And rainwater cleans the building instead of sandblasting, instead of detergents. It's the same thing in fabrics, and it's coming out in all kinds of products now. I really like the examples of us starting to do what plants do and what organisms like mollusks do in the ocean and corals do, and that is takes CO2 as a building material. So there's a new kind of biodegradable plastic that is 50% by weight its CO2 as the feedstock. There's also a new kind of cement. It's an alternative for Portland cement that is a major ingredient in concrete. But this takes CO2 from smokestacks. Using the recipe of the coral reef, it actually, and water with minerals in it, it actually creates an alternative cement that sequesters CO2. I also like the littlest organisms can be brilliant. So there are organisms called brine shrimp that are able to dry out almost completely and then exist for years in that state without dying. And the way they do it is they preserve their cellular material. They're the kind of shrink wrap sugar that wraps around their cellular material. And we're mimicking this in a new way to encapsulate vaccines so that they need no refrigeration, which is huge. 50% of the people who need vaccines don't get them because of break in the cold chain. So that's a big breakthrough from a very small organism. We're also learning a lot from sharks. Sharks, of course, the shark skin suits that you heard about in the Olympics that allowed swimmers to go very, very fast. That same sort of material is being put on airplanes and on the hulls of ships. But the new thing that we're learning from sharks is that the skin of the Galapagos shark is rippled in such a way that it keeps bacteria from landing on the surface of its skin. This is being mimicked in a thin film product called Sharklet that is being used a lot in hospitals now for doorknobs and railings and hospital beds. And what it does is it repels bacteria, but without chemicals. And this is really important as we try to reduce our use of antibiotics, because we know that those, you know, breed for resistance. So we have superbugs. So in the fight against superbugs, having a physical rather than a chemical means of repelling bacteria is really, really important.
You've been listening to author and innovation consultant Janine Benyus. Come to earthsky.org for video of our interview with Benyus at her home near the mountains of Montana. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Quiet Company, Sleep Good, The Black and White Years, 100 Flowers, and Okote Soul Sounds. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end is terrifying. What you don't know
won't hurt ya. How about you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't.